Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mint Mob Podcast. Jason here, joined by my buddy Alex over in Germany. We're going to jump into what's going on in the world today of NFTs, of course. I think Alex mentioned off mic that he's seen a little bit of negativity floating through the timeline, as well as a few other topics. And then, of course, jump into Goodfellas, what we've got coming up with the next AI drop. And then, of course, we've got Sirens being made by Daria. So, Alex, how you doing, buddy? What's going on?
I'm doing really good. And when you just started and welcomed people to the podcast, I remembered how we jumped into the markets. Usually in the very beginning of the podcast episodes, we always spoke about the markets in the first couple of minutes. And that has gotten a little boring recently, to be honest, because markets have not moving a lot lately. We haven't gotten too many news, of course. And one thing I came across is that, like, I see you sharing a lot of positive Solana stuff on your timeline. Mm-hmm. And it's actually crazy because if I try to find positive news for any other chain, there is actually nothing. I think Solana just posted today that they kind of crushed their record of the amount of transactions they have. And this is like these kind of things you don't see from any other chain, right?
Yeah,
it's crazy, actually, how like they're like number one by far, it looks like.
Yeah, in terms of like transaction volume and transaction volume acquisition, they've been killing it. They posted, you know, there was always this conversation about, you know, can Solana flip Ethereum, blah, blah, blah. And Solana had posted that they flipped Ethereum in total RWA holders for the first mm-hmm. time, right? And then someone posted underneath that, yeah, but, and you look at the total value of the chain, and the total value of Ethereum was sitting at like 15 billion versus, you know, like 1.8 billion in Solana, which is, you know, roughly seven times, you know, the value of Solana. And my argument here is like, well, you know, Ethereum started 8 years before Solana. So for Solana to overtake Ethereum in any meaningful way, in any meaningful metric, is significant. And it points to the fact that the Ethereum Foundation has done a pretty poor job, I would say, of like stewarding their community. A lot of it got splintered when they started doing the L2 spinoffs. And of course, we're finding out more and more of the L2 nonsense is just useless. And it's all going to be going to effectively zero. And when I say effectively zero, it doesn't necessarily mean the tokens go all the way to zero, but it means the interest level and the total acquisition of new users is going to like fall to, you know, basically a negligible amount. Like it'll be like a niche sort of a thing. And so when we look at this, you know, Solana is gaining ground. It's picked up PayPal as the next sort of platform that's going to be using Solana for stable tokens and for its specific stable token, the PY token. So, I mean, there's a lot of great things happening on Solana. And I feel like if you're not building here, you're already behind. So I'm happy to be here. And, you know, I'm not just cheerleading for Solana, as I've said a million times over. If something changes with Solana's growth or acquisition or adoption curves, then, you know, I'd be the first one to look at going somewhere else. But right now, Solana seems to be a good place to be.
I wonder where would you go? Where would you look? Is there anything you feel like that comes close to what Solana does? Because, like I said, at the end, there is like, I'm not sure like if it's my bubble where I'm in, the algorithm maybe, but I do not see any great news from other chains, like groundbreaking news. And this is like always Solana. So I wonder, is there anything you have on your radar when it comes to other blockchains?
I don't have anything on my radar specifically right now. I mean, you got your top three, in my opinion, which is Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana. Ethereum has sort of stagnated, if we're being honest. Their token barely hit a new high. They've been hovering at like 50% of their last all-time high. At least Solana touched its previous high. And, you know, with the adoption curves the way that they are, you can see plenty of room for the price action to run, especially as the inflation rate continues to come down in Solana, which I believe it drops 15% a year. So I'd have to double check that. But Ethereum's switch from proof of work to proof of stake, while it might have been a technical marvel, it basically invalidated their L2s, and I think it pissed a lot of people off. But the other thing it did was it sort of invalidated the tribalism. So, you know, we found and work with a bunch of artists on Polygon, for example. You know, that Polygon token has dropped to, I don't know, whatever it is, like 18 cents or 15 cents. The last time I looked at it, I don't even know what it is today. I mean, down from a tremendous high. Interest there has waned. There's some great projects and artists on it, but it doesn't serve those projects to stay there. So like if you're on an L2, you would want to move to ETH by default. I mean, it just makes sense. Like just go move to ETH. At least there you would have the prestige of the, you know, sort of first, you know, smart contract platform to ever exist outside of the Bitcoin ecosystem. At least you have that prestige. And a lot of the, of course, you know, top tier, you know, art galleries and auction houses are using ETH, right? So you would have the prestige associated with it. If I were to move from Solana to another chain, it would be a tough call because I don't really think there's a top, second, or third right now. I think Solana and ETH are jockeying for position, with Solana having lower fees and faster confirmation rates and the ability to run more transactions than ETH. So, I mean, I would want to stay here until that changes or until adoption basically falls by the wayside. And even if, you know, like ETH might be slower or a little more clunky than Solana, if Solana fell off, you would still want to move to something like an ETH because you at least have the prestige of first mover advantage and the prestige of being associated with all of the art houses that are using ETH as like a basic backbone. But what I see in the future is, you know, Solana supplanting more and more and more of that as the markets continue to expand. So right now, nothing on my radar outside the top three. And hopefully, again, fingers crossed, I don't have to look outside of Solana.
It's actually so crazy that whenever you point out what the quote-unquote utility of Ethereum is, and the only thing this it comes down to is basically first mover, right? Like imagine Solana would have been first. Do you think Ethereum would have any kind of an NFT minted on its blockchain?
Yeah, it would be tough. I mean, but you can't discount the power of first mover. You know, you just can't. You know, like imagine Bitcoin doesn't exist, but Ethereum comes into existence. What does Ethereum become, right? It's going to become that base layer value chain. That's kind of the role of Bitcoin right now. Ethereum added smart contracts to Bitcoin basically when it was a proof of work chain, and that was super important. And it was a milestone event in the history of blockchain. And, you know, people like Vitalik, who helped promote that smart contract platform, are to be commended. And, of course, a lot of art was built on top of that because of the structure of the chain allowed it much, much easier than something like Bitcoin, right? So you can't discount first mover advantage because it brought in all of the early adopters, and a lot of the early adopters built code or NFT projects or whatever the case may be on top of that chain. And then of course this first mover advantage, and again we talk about status, like the status of that has translated into the art world as being like a top tier chain, right? Again, used in most of the major art houses. And of course the major art houses support multiple chains. You know, Solana of course is one of them, but it's going to take time to supplant that. My only argument for Solana over ETH right now is the fact that Solana's adoption curves are extremely high. They continue to make inroads into business, which is going to be incredibly important. The speed of the transaction processing and the user acquisition piece can't be denied. And so when you're looking at that, it only makes sense that if a better product presents itself, that a business, whether it's, you know, like your local grocery store tracking like rewards, or your local, you know, Christie's auction house who's tracking provenance, it only makes sense that they use what's fastest and best. So, you know, as long as this continues to happen, you know, I see a bright future for Solana. I could see $500 tokens, $1,000 tokens in the next few years. I don't think any of those, you know, projections are unreal or unattainable. And so for me, that's really what it comes down to. And I feel like there's a lot of energy, like positive energy around building on the chain, because of the fact that there's a lot of like teams around the world who are like working together to advance the technology, be it Metaplex or whomever. You know, there's a lot of, Solana has what they call super teams in different areas of the world where they come together and they basically, you know, work on specific pieces of code. And I've seen Solana incorporate and try and test and iterate on a bunch of different things. So with all that taken together, I think the most upside between Ethereum and Solana right now rests on Solana. And I think that the advantage that ETH had for the first 8 years of its existence before Solana ever came into being, the fact that Solana is making up ground in certain areas, like RWA, for example, points to the fact that the Ethereum Foundation has dropped the ball, that the Ethereum community hasn't been as united and sort of focused on development and innovation as it could be. And I think all these are positives for Solana. So that's kind of where my mind is when I think of these two in competition with one another.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one thing that kind of maybe fits to the topic is that if you look at the NFT market sentiment, and I was just, you know, scrolling through my timeline and checking what people say, and there were two viral posts that came across my timeline, and they were saying, like, the first one was saying, NFTs were the most successful scam in crypto history. And then there is like a screenshot showing all the blue chip NFT collections, Bored Apes, Azuki, Moonbirds, Cool Cats. And it shows basically their all-time high price compared to their current price. And we all know, you know, they declined in prices, everything went down. The only Solana collections you see on here are DE Gods and OK Bears, which are obviously, which have been flagships of Solana projects, of course. And then there is another post basically doing the same, saying, what does it say? A quote unquote, buy NFTs, they said. NFTs are the future, they said. And then he attached an image of all these blue chip collections and basically how much in percentage they're down from their all-time highs. And it's basically from 97% to 92% for all the collections. And that's interesting because I feel like, you know, especially if you look at the comments, many people are arguing that we should stop measuring the NFT market purely by what the big collections are doing. As we all know, for a long time, the market narrative was driven by blue chip collections, right? Like Bored Apes, CryptoPunks, Azuki. And when their flop prices went up, people said the market was thriving, right? When they dropped, headlines claimed NFTs are dead. And that actually is a problem, right? If you look at how markets evolved and where we are today, if you look at, you know, the artists we have and, you know, all the independent artists creating one of ones and all that stuff, do you feel like this does not get enough recognition from people looking at the NFT space?
I don't think the average person appreciates NFTs at all. I still feel like most people in NFTs are early adopters on some level, and they believe in the tech, but there hasn't been a lot of iteration yet on what can be done with it. Sure, you can mint pretty pictures and you can offer them for sale on, you know, whatever platform you choose. But the question becomes like, where is the utility outside of that for the average person? Because, I mean, think about your friends or your family or your circle of friends outside of that. Very few of them were quote unquote art collectors. You know, how many art collectors do you know in real life? You know, very few. It's been one of those markets that's been inaccessible to the average person for a lot of years. Now, maybe you know someone who collects comics or, you know, something along those lines that contains an element of art. But like truly collecting one of one type fine art has been exclusively relegated to those of us who have, you know, tremendous means, like expensive paintings, thousands, 10,000s, 100,000, million-dollar paintings. Like, this has been something that was inaccessible to the average person. So when you start talking about collecting artwork, I think the first thing you're going to talk about is collecting in general. It's like, okay, well, if you've collected comics or you collected cards or you collected something of, you know, like visual value to you, whether it's video games or whatever the case may be, experiences, those are the people who I feel like in the real world would translate over to like an NFT collector, but not necessarily the art collector. So the question becomes, how do you communicate to those people? Because they're often different markets. So what the high-end buyer is looking for is status. What the average person is looking for is to fulfill a psychological need. Like, it's going to take them somewhere. in their history, it's going to evoke memories of childhood. It's going to do something along those lines. Whereas the high-end buyer might appreciate a piece, but at the end of the day, when they have a dinner party, they want to show it off and say, I just bought this $1.2 million Monet and you can't afford it, mm-hmm. right? So that they can have status at the table. So it's two different types of markets. And I think the market will continue to evolve that way. And right now, it's anybody's guess as to how much of the average person will come into that market. I think that the NFTs have opened the door through fractional ownership. So there's I know there's a couple different groups who are doing fractional ownership of specific real world collectibles. And, you know, these have been like really expensive baseball cards or the Declaration of Independence or George Washington's suit or, you know, all these different real world items that they have basically created fractional interest in by selling NFTs that add up to the sum total of that particular piece. And then they're reselling those pieces, or the NFT holders are reselling their fractional interests in the secondary market to get their money back. So it basically created a secondary market, right? So all of these different things have yet to sort of reach their zenith, their apex of their utility, largely because the UI is shit still in Web3 land. And I think ultimately the chain that a particular thing rides on becomes completely like unimportant. So long as it's a stable database, no one's going to care. They're going to care about their experience with the chain, and that's really all that's going to matter. So I feel like at the end of the day, when we're looking at NFTs and calling them dead, or the average person's getting involved or not getting involved, it all comes down to utility and perceived value by the end user. And we haven't done a good job in Web3 of conveying any of that.
Okay, so you would agree if we said that you know, blue chip NFT floors as a market indicator are actually misleading for the broader ecosystem?
I think they're completely useless for the broader ecosystem. These are vanity metrics right now. That's all they are. It's like saying, you know, I sold something, you know, for a greater rate than you did. It's the same thing as having the Monet on your wall. It's just a vanity metric. It doesn't have anything to do with the real world in terms of like adoption or use cases or any of the rest of it. You know, collecting pretty things is a use case. But again, like when you're talking about NFT floors, a lot of the NFT floors are directly tied to the status that you buy when you buy into that particular project. You know, like we had a collector, Metalhead, who just bought like a mutant ape and he made that as PFP. Well, why? There's a certain status that's associated with that, right? Like I owned three or four D-Gods at one point, but I never made them my PFP because A, I don't really like the art, and B, I'm not gonna sell out my own project to show you that I have status in the community, right? Or an OK Bear that I had held at one point that was worth 83 soul, you know? Like, I'm not going to hold that over your head and say, oh, look how much money I spent, or look how much money I made on this thing. You know, I'm not going to do that, as I don't really care about that. But what I do care about is, can we sell what we're selling in a marketplace that seems to be resistant to what's happening? And I think the answer is yes, so long as you're providing value to the specific group that you want to serve. And for us, that's collectors and creators. So we need to keep talking to those people. Because ultimately, if you play the status game, it's zero sum and it can work for you or against you. So Johnny Status Guy, who buys your collection today, could sell it tomorrow. And now all of a sudden, all the silly posts that you made sucking up to him look like you're a dick, you know, because now your shit got sold. So, you know, at the end of the day, like, you have to realize that all the games that we're playing with status, specifically on X, zero sum games, are win-lose games. And what we want to play with Goodfellas are win-win games. Like, how does everybody win in the long run? And that's not to say that if I sold a piece to someone of high status tomorrow that I wouldn't be in the market promoting. I would certainly do that because I want to capitalize on that marketing opportunity. But I'm also not going to forget what it is that I'm doing and not forget what it is that, you know, this zero-sum game brings, which is a double-edged sword, right? So, yeah, it's interesting. We'll see what happens with the NFT floors. But for me right now, they're just vanity metrics. They're measures of status And, you know, he or she who can demonstrate high status is the one that people gravitate toward. And so there's a bunch of different ways to get that. One is to go into the marketplace and to interact with someone with high status, which is why everybody wants to take a photo or a selfie with a famous person. It's like, hey, I was close to this person who has high status, right? The other thing is to go into the market and actually do some fucking work, right? Do some fucking work. Like if you go to the gym right now and you look at the dude across from you who's been there every morning at 5:30 a.m., you know, lifting, and he has the body to show for it, right? Like you respect that immediately. That guy has status in the room that no one else has because he's put in the work. The same thing is true in any business, whether you're in dry cleaning or car sales or fucking NFT sales. If you put in the work, the status that you gain from putting in the work is more longstanding than the status you gain from being associated with someone like this, the celebrity selfie kind of a thing. But again, like if you're a promo and you're smart, you're going to take advantage of all of it. And you're going to realize that the double-edged sword can work for you and against you, and you want to plan accordingly. And so that's my only message to like the, you know, to the collections that are like focusing primarily on floor price. And I feel like a lot of the collections that are mentioned in these little X posts, I feel like the collections themselves don't necessarily focus on floor price. Like if I go to OK Bears right now and I go into their Discord, they're not going to be talking about floor price. It's not what they're talking about. They're talking about building playgrounds, and they're talking about, you know, their next clothing drop, and they're talking about, you know, what the next thing that they can do to contribute to the world is going to be, because their whole thing is, you know, the we're all going to make it, right? The wag me, we're all going to make it. That's their whole spiel. So they're out building basketball courts and producing, and ultimately over time as they produce, the work starts to speak for itself, and the work becomes the status, rather than being associated with their floor price, which at one point was insanity, right? So I don't feel like, especially right now with the market being down across the board, that the floor price really matters. I think that what's happening underneath really matters, like the building underneath. Are you still going? Are you still moving? Are you still putting good things into the world? And if you do that, then you don't have to worry about the status plays. I've seen these play out in a lot of different businesses. It's really funny. I can give you an example from like the CrossFit world, for example, when we're talking about status. We had a gym one time and we brought in a trainer who was like super good with people, super high energy. Like she's committed to CrossFit and like committing to going to the games. And like everyone just loved her energy, super infectious, you know, and we're paying her to work at the gym, right? And we bring in a lot of people and we sell the experience as part of that, right? But what happens when she says, oh, you know what? I have a better offer at the gym down the street, right? Well, the gym down the street is going to pay me more. Okay, well, I'm going to go work for them. What happens to your population of people close to that gym? They all follow her to the next gym. And this is what we've seen in NFT land with the quote unquote status plays and the influencers and all the bullshit. The minute they drop the one that they were in for one that they're going to, everybody else does the same thing. So you just have to understand the game that you're playing, whether it's zero sum, whether it's win-win, and you have to play accordingly, especially from a marketing perspective, because you can easily screw yourself if you're not very, very careful with, you know, like harping on your floor price or harping on this association or harping on that. I think ultimately the surefire way to win is to continue to put in the work over time and let the work demonstrate your greatness by showing up day in and day out, regardless of circumstance. I think that's a clip, man. You should clip that.
Yeah, I should clip that. Absolutely. Yeah, I get that. I mean, the one thing I was kind of not worried about, but like, don't you think that smaller artists and, you know, niche communities get kind of still overshadowed by the focus on blue chip collections? Because like, in the end, we heard people speak about that, right? Like when we were on Spaces and people like, I don't know, artists like Maria, they are like, in their everyday lives, they do not like to mention that they, you know, draw NFT art and sell NFTs, because you get that side eye, right? You're like, really? Like NFTs, you know, with the apes who are worthless? Do you feel like if the technology of NFTs started, you know, right away with one of one art, and we never had these degen collections, generative pump and dump schemes, we would have had like a healthier space now?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we definitely would have a healthier space right now. Again, like if you go from playing win-lose games, or zero-sum games, mm-hmm. you know, to win-win games, the long-term benefits are always better, right? It's like the old proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, right? The pump and dump stuff is let's go fast. Let's throw it against the wall. Let's collect the money. And that's great for the person who collected the money and then skipped town in their new Lamborghini, right? But it's terrible for the collectors, right? But if you have someone that says, okay, well, we want to build this long-standing brand and we want you to come with us and we want you to be here and participate and take part in the ride as a unit, then that's a very different game. Now we're going to go a little slower, but we're going to build a relationship and we're going to draw other people in over time. And we're going to play this win-win game where when, you know, when Goodfellas wins, you win, you know, or when I win, you win. These are the games that really promote and provide like long-standing business to the marketplace. And you can look at any major business in the world and you can see that this is true. Any business that's been around for a long time does win-win work. Whether it's Facebook or X or your local grocery store, it all has to be win-win for it to be long-standing.
Yep, that's true. Very, very good points. All right, let's dive into Goodfellas. So what's on the agenda today? We got core distribution still going on. All pieces that have been submitted are out, so everyone should have his core pieces from Goodfellas batch 1 to 7 in their wallets. We got one thing that I think STC mentioned in the boss channel or in the pub, I'm not sure. As Magic Eden shuts down the support for EVM chains and Bitcoin and all that stuff. I'm not sure if they do it today or tomorrow, but I think it is recommended to unlist or delist anything you have on these chains on Magic Eden to make sure you're not losing any assets. And let me just check. I think they said they shut it down today. Let me just live check if it's happening. If people listen to it tomorrow, it doesn't matter anymore. But it looks like it's still. Oh no, it looks like it's gone. Oh no, it's still available. Okay, so check that, guys, if you still have the possibility. And what else do we have? Next artist, incubator artist, Cosmo Nika. She is going to join us on Spaces, of course, on Friday 20, probably. Maybe she'll join us this Friday already. We'll see. Haven't gotten the piece yet, but I'm sure it's going to be great. I every now and then I go into her object page and check out the pieces she created so far. Like the dark vibe, gothic vibe she creates is pretty cool. And yeah, can't wait to see what she's going to create. And then we reached out to Daria to create additional traits for the Siren Syndicate. And I know there are many fans outside loving the collection of the female form. I love it as well. I love to see what Daria is going to create. I'd love to see some new outfits for some reason. I told her, like, make like 2 or 3 outfits, maybe 2 or 3 cool hand traits. And it's always like, I like when she gets creative. She has like such a great, like, she actually asked me and she was like, can we talk about it and maybe like chat about what can be created? And I was like, you are much more creative than I am. So you're much better at it than I'd ever be. So just let me know if you need help. We can jump on a call with Jason if you need additional input or something. But I'm sure like she's going to deliver something fantastic. And I can't wait for the traits. And what I love about the Sirens is that I think you put the collection together and those traits are not even like you can't use every hair trait with every outfit, for example, right? Like it's so special, actually.
Yeah, there's some traits that were specifically designed to be layered differently. And
yeah,
in the world of NFTs where you're doing generative work and a lot of the layering is very, very simple, what we've done is inside your metadata, you'll notice there's a bunch of added layers. Most of them are set to none right now. You can think of those traits as being layers in the artwork, even though some of them are just textual. But inside those layers, when we are basically regenerating or generating a piece, what we're trying to do is add complexity to make the piece look beautiful, even though it's very simple artwork. So there's a lot of opportunities in generative artwork to break traits up. Like on a specific hair trait, for example, that might hang in front of the shoulder on one side, but is meant to hang behind the shoulder on the other side and show in a different way, might need to be two hair traits. You might have to have two layers to do that, because one has to be in front of the face or the body, and the other has to be behind it to make it look really good. Or you either have to be perfect in your art in such a way that when you layer everything up, it looks like there's no delineation between the line of the shoulder and the line of the hair, for example. So I find that it's much more difficult to make a generative art collection beautiful than it would be to draw one of ones, because in the one of ones, you're constantly editing. Whereas in the generative pieces, you have to do your edits from your imagination. It's like, okay, this piece doesn't exist, but how would it look if, you know? So like coming back through the editorial process is super important. And that's one of the things that we do with the sirens. So if a trait doesn't look right with the hair in the front or the back, or a hand trait in front of a sign, or, you know, whatever the case may be, we go back and we rebuild that art and we rebuild the metadata so that it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that actually, like, I mean, the sirens and actually every batch that we recently had, every single piece was basically almost handpicked. You always paid a lot of attention to composition. Is that something that's fun to you?
It's fun like the first five or six pieces. and then it gets old really, really fast. Like there's a couple of batches that I basically redid 50% of the batch. So of 100 pieces, 50 of them were hand done, you know, just because like the pieces that got created were just not good. You know, you can't trust a computer to make the decision for you. So, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, if you want to have a beautiful generative collection, that's what you have to do. Like you have to be willing to commit to the work. And if you're willing to commit to the work, then you can create a fantastic result. If not, then you're going to get a bunch of generative pieces that are not artful and are not good compositions. And, you know, there's always going to be a little bit of subjectivity, but, you know, you have to remember art for the most part is not subjective. And people always like bristle when I say that. A good composition to you and a good composition to me, something that we both find appealing, is probably going to appeal to 80, 90% of the population. And this is evident in nature. Like the argument comes from nature, which if you guys want to read David Deutsch, feel free. But a lot of the stuff that we consider subjective is not subjective. And in fact, like you can take some of the worst art in the world or the worst songs, or the worst music, and you can give them to a producer or an editor, and they can make it look like something amazing just with the editorial eye. So I think a lot of people forget how important the editorial eye is in artwork. And when I say artwork, I mean film, television, writing, painting, you know, digital art. All of these things that you see in magazines or on television shows or on the silver screen have all been edited to death. Like they have been edited, and re-edited. And in fact, I see you wearing a Star Wars shirt. Star Wars is a classic example. The film that George Lucas made was absolute garbage until it went through the editorial process. And when they took it through the editorial process, they removed all of the unnecessary stuff and actually made a cohesive story. And, you know, had it not been for that, you know, Star Wars would probably not be the phenomenon that it was. And neither would any great work of art or music or literature.
Absolutely. I agree. Absolutely. One last thing I wanted to jump into is you shared a link in the pub with a orb markets.io, like a Solana wallet searching tool. Yes. And I'm just trying it out right now, looking at it. And I think what you like about it is the possibility to filter, you know, the collections. For some reason, it sometimes shows me failed to load media. Not sure if that is like a problem of, because it actually shouldn't. It's like just the animated pieces. But I like the general, like the UI we have here. It's actually really simple and good to, you know, check out the NFTs you have, right?
Yeah, and so for those of you guys who are curious about, well, how do I see my old NFTs and my new NFTs and blah, 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 the existing Solana search tools like SolScan, for example, don't do a good job of showing your core NFTs, for example. So if you go look in your portfolio on SolScan, you won't really see your core. They haven't updated it yet. But if you go to Orb, you can see all of your core NFTs. You can see all of your regular NFTs. They've done a good job of incorporating all the different NFT technologies. So you can literally sift and sort through your portfolio and see exactly what you have. And it eliminates the question marks of, you know, is this in my wallet? Is this not in my wallet? It'll even tell you, you know, your about your staked accounts and this, that, and the other thing. So it's a much better visual tool. So for those of you guys who want to search your wallet and find certain things that you don't feel like you're seeing, usually when you go to Orb, it will show up. And this was built by the guys at Helios. And as you guys know, like we use Helios for our API provider. And so like the guys over there are developers and they've stayed on top of the Metaplex technology. And so for me personally, it just makes sense to use Orb unless and until Solana FM or SolScan catches up with the core technology.
Yeah, like I said, looking at it right now and it actually looks quite good. Absolutely, yeah. All right. I think this should be it for today. As I mentioned, we are paying attention and focusing on the drop from Cosmonica, or Nika, as she's called. I think her name is Nika. And she will have her drop in 11 days from now. She will join us on Spaces, of course. She wrote a really good article on X about herself and the art she creates. You should definitely check that out. I think it's in her pinned post. And yeah, we got a lot of artists lined up still. We think it's going to be great. Do we have, like, we never spoke about, like, we mentioned the Sirens a couple minutes ago. When can people expect the next Sirens badge? I would love to see new Sirens in April. What do you think?
I think it's totally doable. It's going to come down to, you know, Daria's workload. I mean, she's the one who's going to be doing the newest traits, of course. And I think you've already begun that conversation with her based on what I saw. So it's really going to come down to her and when that artwork can be submitted. So once that artwork is submitted, you know, my job in terms of the creation and editorial piece is pretty straightforward. I've done it enough times now to know, you know, this is what it entails. And it usually takes me a few days. But with the new traits and the artwork that she submits, there shouldn't be any real surprises about how things need to go. So I'm hoping I won't have to, you know, do much editorial to it, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens with that so that, you know, ultimately the pieces that are produced are beautiful, because that's always the goal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I just checked Magic Eden again before we wrap up here, and I saw that you are not able to use any other chain, any chain other than Solana anymore. So it looks like you cannot connect your Ethereum wallets or your Bitcoin wallets to Magic Eden anymore. So I hope you got your stuff out. I think it's not even like an issue for Bitcoin ordinals. I think they are not stuck there. I think you still got them in your wallets, but I'm not sure about, you know, Ethereum NFTs or Polygon or whatever. Yeah, I hope they will have any kind of solution if pieces seem to be stuck.
Yeah, I mean, none of that.
They have like one.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going
to
say, like,
to mention, it's like it's crazy how they focus on like these packs now. That's actually like making gambling available on Magic Eden as well now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always been available, right? Like everything.
Oh, yeah.
Everything you buy on OpenSea, Tensor, Magic Eden has always been a gamble, because like the people that you are buying from are always unknown, always anonymous for the most part. You know, just jackasses in the world trying to make a quick buck. But yeah, I mean, like, at least if you look at the platform as what it is, you know, if you look at the packs or whatever as what it is, then you can at least know the game that you're playing, right? Whereas so many people in the past were duped into thinking that this creator or that founder was going to save me, and that all, you know, the world is going to be great if I'm just listening to this person. I believe, you know, and of course I hope, and of course hope and belief is not a strategy. You know, it's just the way you string people along. So it's always been a gambling platform. It just might, they just might formalize parts of it now. And for those of you guys who have wallets, you know, like your Magic Eden wallet or whatever that you need to get out of, you know, just export your keys and pull them into Phantom or, you know, whatever wallet. The only thing that you wanted to make sure of is that you didn't have anything listed, because when you list, you actually give, you give authority to Magic Eden. So you don't want to do that. You just want to make sure everything's unlisted. And if it's in your existing wallet, pull the keys into a new wallet. You'd be good to go. So yeah, not a big deal.
Absolutely. All right, guys. So one thing I'd like to recommend is joining us on Friday Spaces. If we are lucky, we will have Metalhead, aka Scott, with us and finally settling the conversation and discussion we have about IP. And yeah, would love to see you guys around. Would be great to chat. And yeah, it's been great. I mean, we always talk art, of course. We talk crypto. We will maybe have Nika with us on Spaces, talk about her piece, her, the art she creates. And couldn't be more excited, man. It's like having an artist incubator lineup like the one we have, having a Sirens batch coming up. The year is starting pretty good, right?
Yeah, man. It's going pretty well so far. Continue to grow. And, you know, I'm looking forward to getting some of these tools that we've talked about out. So, in addition to the artwork, you know, some really cool things are coming down the pike in terms of creation. And then, of course, you and I, you know, finalizing and formalizing some company structures, which we can announce later once we're deeper into that process. But yeah, lots going on for sure.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Have a great week, everyone. We hope to see you guys on Friday. Take care. Bye-bye.
See you guys.